Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Philip Shane, Paul Boyer, Brad, and our new patron, Farhan. Welcome, Farhan. Good to have you.
Yay.
On this episode of DTNS, what is going on at Xbox and the gaming studios under its umbrella? The plot ever thickens. Plus, TikTok joins the trend of making AI transparent. And Shannon Morris is going to explain AI-generated voice and how it might affect your security. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. From Studio Animal House, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Columbus, Ohio, I'm Rob Dunwood.
From Studio Colorado, I'm Shannon Morse.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Well, I'm glad we're all here today because we've got a lot of tech news to get through. And as we do on every show, we'll start with the quick hits. Now, Neuralink is not the only or even the first brain-computer interface company, but due to a variety of factors, some of it being the executives behind the company, it does tend to dominate press in this category. Neuralink reported it had implanted its tech in the first human patient as a trial back in January. The company posted Wednesday that some of the threads that connected the device to the neurons retracted in the patient's brain, which reduced the ability to measure speed and accuracy. The company says it compensated by modifying the algorithm that interpreted the signals and improving the techniques for translating those signals to cursory movements. Now, this doesn't pose a health risk to the patient. The patient is reportedly still using it 8 hours per day.
Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery announced a combined streaming service bundle, including Disney Plus, Hulu, and Max content for one price starting sometime this summer. What that price might be wasn't shared. ESPN Plus also wasn't mentioned as part of the bundle, but Disney CEO Bob Iger previously said main ESPN content would be coming to Disney Plus by the end of this year. Disney is also partnering with Fox and Warner on a combined sports service, and reportedly Paramount wants to bundle Paramount Plus Showtime with Peacock.
We're going to talk a little bit more about cable alternative bundles in GDI later in the show because, boy, do we have options more than ever. And yet it can be a little confusing. As is always the case with successful, respected, beloved, controversial, or a combination of all four types CEOs, Bloomberg's Mark Gurman wrote Wednesday that when it comes to who might replace current Apple CEO Tim Cook at some point, because he's 64, and some wonder when he might want to retire, things aren't totally clear. Sources tell Gurman that if a change were to be made soon, Chief Operating Officer Jeff Williams is the most obvious next Apple CEO. But Williams is only a few years younger than Cook. The Apple board reportedly would like to have someone at the helm who's going to stick around for a decade, if not longer. If Cook remains CEO for another few years, which is possible, the report points to John Ternus, current senior vice president of hardware engineering, as the most likely successor.
A new study from Pew Research Center surveyed 1,423 U.S. teens between the ages of 13 and 17 about their video game habits, if they play, how often they play, how friendships are forged, and if games get in the way of them doing well in school or sleeping well. 85% of U.S. teens say they play video games, with 41% playing daily. 72% of players say gaming is a way to spend time with their friends, with over half saying gaming helps their problem-solving skills, and 41% also saying that it has hurt their sleep. Bullying is an ongoing problem, with 80% of all teens saying harassment over video games is a problem.
That last part is interesting, because even the teens who say they are not gamers say there's an issue with harassment in gaming.
Four to five.
On Wednesday, OpenAI published its model spec, which lists the rules that OpenAI says should govern its models, like ChatGPT. These rules help create filters and tuning to reduce false or dangerous responses. Developer intent, also a big part of the model spec. For example, using a model to answer questions about language learning shouldn't be including other topics or straying away too much from the intended result. OpenAI also wants to distinguish things like health information from NSFW content, not safe for work content, with the document explaining, quote, "We're exploring whether we can responsibly provide the ability to generate NSFW content in age-appropriate contexts." All right, Rob, things have been, it's been a roller coaster over at Xbox Studios. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's definitely been a week at Microsoft. Things are feeling a bit chaotic for Xbox. Tuesday, three Xbox subsidiaries were shuttered with the absorption of a fourth. Two of the studios affected include Arcane Austin and Tokyo-based Tango Gameworks, maker of action game Hi-Fi Rush. Bloomberg sources say Tango was in the process of pitching a sequel due to the critical acclaim of the game, which would require continued investment from Xbox. Also reported this week, Xbox started offering voluntary severance agreements to producers, quality assurance testers, and other staff at ZeniMax, which Xbox purchased in 2020 for $7.5 billion. Sources also say Xbox is planning more cuts.
During a town hall with ZeniMax staff, which happened yesterday morning, Wednesday morning, Xbox president Matt Booty said that the company's studios had been spread too thin, using the analogy of peanut butter on bread. I don't know. Maybe you like thin peanut butter on your bread, but you know, you get the reference. And that leaders across the division were understaffed, and closing studios opened up resources elsewhere. That's pretty common for, you know, when a company wants to downsize, saying, you know, we're just going to consolidate resources, et cetera, et cetera. Jill Braff, who's head of ZeniMax Studios, said in that same town hall that she hoped the reorg would allow the division, which also develops Fallout and Doom, to work more closely on fewer projects. And that, quote, "It's hard to support nine studios all across the world with a lean central team with an ever-growing plate of things to do," end quote. Okay, so plenty of folks in the industry shaking their heads saying Microsoft bought up a bunch of gaming companies. You know, maybe this is pandemic related, when a lot of people were home, you know, enjoyed the, you know, the fruits of that. And now saying, well, hold on a second. Centrally, we can't support all these folks. Shannon, what do you think about this?
You know, it is concerning. Of course, I feel for the folks that are being let go. Like, that's kind of the worst thing that can happen to you. And it's usually out of the blue. You have no idea. But when it comes to the gaming industry, I'm often concerned as a gamer with how this is going to affect games that I'm looking forward to, given that they're, you know, lowering the amount of staff that is going to be working on these. And they're focusing, like Jill mentioned, on like, just specific few games, for example. Like, is that going to delay games that I've been looking forward to for a few years? Like, for example, Fallout 5. Like, is that going to be delayed even further? Because we're not expecting that for a few years after Elder Scrolls, like the newest Elder Scrolls game. So you never really know if these are going to affect how the current market is selling these games. Are they going to have as many coming out every year? Are we going to see these delays? So anytime I see something like this, I always call back to it. If we do see delay announcements, I'm like, well, it's probably because of that. That's probably one of the reasons.
Go ahead, Rob.
So one of the things that happens to companies in general, Microsoft and Xbox are not immune to this. In times of boom, they overhire, they overcommit to things they're going to do, and it always comes back to the mean. So we basically had this little, you know, this little incident where Earth shut down for about 2.5 years. And everyone was home. So what did people do? They played a lot of video games. So all the video game developers said, "Ooh, let's create more video games." And they did so to the extent that now that we're out of that boom time, it's dwindling time. So what is happening now is that, oh, wow, people aren't playing as many games. We're not making as much money. Well, let's cut this. Let's get rid of this studio. Let's combine these studios together. Let's push this out a little bit. And it seems like this is just the ebb and flow of how gaming has been literally for decades, but it's exacerbated because it was really put on, you know, they were really put on steroids with what they did during the pandemic. And now I think things are just kind of right sizing back to where they probably should have been in the first place.
100%. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I've never worked at a gaming studio in any capacity, but this sounds a lot like, okay, you know, let's capitalize on the fact that we're experiencing a bunch of growth. Even if that's not sustainable, capitalize now, cut back later. And that is why I think you end up having a lot of people who say, like, I do great work. I'm so smart. I'm creative. Like, how did I lose my job? This injustice cannot stand. And that's a big, there's a big difference between being part of an executive team and looking at numbers and saying, yeah, we need to make cuts. When you're running something like Xbox, you got a lot of people who you might not personally know, and not that they're not great. You simply don't have the money even for this wonderful game. Shannon, you mentioned Fallout 5. Supposedly, you know, the successor to Hi-Fi Rush, widely anticipated. If there isn't money, then, you know, maybe it'll be revisited down the road. Maybe not.
I mean, this speaks to a broader issue, and in many ways, the video game industry is a parallel to the entertainment industry in a much broader sense. Video games require a huge budget, especially AAA games. You're looking at $250 million, in some cases up to and even passing $1 billion in terms of not just development costs, but marketing and all the other stuff you do to make something successful. Hi-Fi Rush was well received, but it didn't really sell as much as they wanted. Arkane Austin was the creators of Redfall, which was highly anticipated, but literally shipped with a number of bugs that made it nearly unplayable for a good many people. And, you know, they worked through it, but the problem is that affected the sales of these games, which now are retailing at $70. So you have kind of a vicious cycle. You have game development budgets that are increasingly getting larger because people want to ensure that the game that they're releasing finds an audience, not unlike making a summer blockbuster, right? You tend to focus on the movies, which is why summer blockbusters all kind of feel the same at a certain point, is because there's a very formulaic approach to it. We know we can get X amount of dollars, ROI, a return on investment, when we make this kind of movie. When we make this kind of tentpole game, we know we can expect this X amount of dollars. And unfortunately, what happens is that kind of shortens the or reduces the available funding for all the other studios, and also it limits the ability to kind of break out of the mold with something unique or interesting that isn't the same, you know, run and gun shooter or sports game or, you know, some other version of a platformer. And so what you're seeing is kind of the industry maturing, but also coming to the grips with, you know, what Rob was saying, it's going through a boom and bust cycle that I don't think is going to be changing anytime soon.
Yeah.
Well, folks, TikTok announced Thursday that it will start adding an AI-generated label to third-party AI-generated content watermarked with content credentials, the technology from the Coalition of Content provenance and authenticity, C2PA, founded by Microsoft and Adobe and other companies. TikTok already labels content made with TikTok AI effects with an AI flag, but will start automatically labeling content uploaded to the platform with content credential tags from platforms such as DALL-E 3 and Bing Image Creator. Google has pledged to support content credentials as well. And in a later phase, TikTok will start adding content credential tags to metadata of content created with TikTok's own AI effects products to content downloaded for posting elsewhere. This all works by adding a symbol alongside metadata of content generated with the AI, establishing its provenance or its origin of the content. So I think what's happening here is that definitely TikTok, I think you're going to see this with Instagram and Facebook and just Meta products in general and other social media platforms, is that they want to make their users very aware of when something is fake versus when something is real. They don't want to have users thinking, oh, I can't get real content here, so I'm going to go elsewhere for it. So I think that they're going to do whatever they can do. And this C2PA foundation essentially is saying, well, hey, here's what we're going to do. This is a standard. We're going to put these flags in, or these, basically they're going to put a little image in the AI metadata, letting you know where a image originated from. That way you won't be fooled by something, because AI just keeps getting better and better every day. So right now it's just TikTok, but my gut tells me you're going to see other social media platforms follow along with this standard from C2PA as well.
You know, this reminds me, and I know it's a little apples and oranges, but you know, TikTok doing this is not just like, we just want our community to know what's real and what isn't. It's TikTok being like, hey, we're going to label it and then it's up to you. We're doing our best. We do not want to be liable for, you know, a situation coming down the road. But it also reminds me of back a few years ago when social media companies were accused of not forcing creators to make it more aware when something was an ad. You know, it's a video. Oh, you know, this is my favorite new mug. You know, you know, like, you got to do hashtag ad or partner affiliate, or, you know, there are all sorts of standards in place that didn't used to be there. And it was confusing. Many social companies were forced to say, yeah, okay, it's confusing. We're going to have to make the creator do that. And if they don't, it's not on us. That's, you know, that's on them. And either something gets taken down or worse. But I think in general, you know, if I draw a, you know, stick figure of Shannon and update it, upload it to TikTok and say, look at Shannon Morse, everybody, no one thinks that that's really her. You know, they're like, okay, Sarah's like a really bad artist. But if I create something that's pretty close, you know, or at least is going to fool a certain amount of people, yeah, that might be a fun thing that Shannon and I decided to do. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea. But it should be very clear that it's an art generated or, you know, AI generated product. And that helps me and Shannon and the company that is providing the platform, you know, that we're having fun in.
You know, thanks for using me as an example, Sarah. one thing that I noticed
just
on
a binder of stick figures of Shannon, I guess I'll just submit that now. Yeah.
I recently noticed that on YouTube, when you are a content creator and you're uploading a new video, they now have a setting that you have to choose between yes or no that includes, is this like AI generated content? I don't remember exactly what it is. I never use AI generated content, so I always check no when I'm uploading my videos for my channel. So I would love to see like Instagram do the same thing that TikTok is doing here, because I often run across, like in the anime space, you have cosplayers who go to conventions and they dress up as their favorite cartoon character. And oftentimes I'm seeing AI generated cosplay. And I see all these comments from people that are saying like, oh my gosh, who did this cosplay? Like, who's this model? Who's the photographer? And there is none, because it's AI generated. So like, these people are being faked out by this AI generated content. So I want to see more flagging happen, especially as a content creator myself, because I want to make it clear if I'm the person that's actually standing in front of a camera, or if somebody like you gave that example, Sarah, if somebody had created a AI generated Shannon Morse to do some kind of video. Like, I want people to know, whether it's me or whether it's not me. And right now, we don't have enough flags, or those flags aren't really available to us. So good job, TikTok. We need more. Well, let's see this across all platforms.
The cosplay example is a really good one. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, if AI-generated art is, you know, adding to the fun, you know, inspiring joy, it's like, that's not a bad thing. It's just a different category.
Yeah.
And you know, if we can celebrate that category for what it is, and there are going to be superstars, like, you know, somebody who's just like the biggest AI artist. I mean, you already see that kind of stuff now. That's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we have to understand that this is an emergence of something, you know, beyond what we know to exist. And let's not confuse ourselves.
Right. I agree.
Well, good. you might be using an Android device and maybe very interested in AI. You might be an Android enthusiast, or you just like to follow Android news. If so, Android Faithful may be the podcast for you. Every week, Android aficionados Ron Richards, Huan Tui Rao, Michelle Rahman, and Jason Howell bring you the latest in Android, latest and greatest. All the good things. You can watch it live. They record Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's 5 p.m. Pacific at youtube.com/DailyTechNewsShow. And you can subscribe to the Android Faithful feed at androidfaithful.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Back in February, Motherboard posted a story by Joseph Cox titled "How I Broke Into a Bank Account with an AI-Generated Voice." In the report, Cox details how he was able to fool his bank's voice ID security system by using a generative AI version of his voice. Although Cox's four initial attempts failed, he eventually found success using 11 Labs' voice creation service. The bank offered only one follow-up security challenge, his birth date, that Cox also bypassed using an AI-generated version of his voice.
Now, Cox points out that although Lloyds of London was the bank used in this demonstration, many banks in the U.S. also offer the voice ID security feature. That would be including TD Bank, Chase, Wells Fargo, big banks. Cox also said that after sending the video to the U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the agency replied, quote, "The CFPB is concerned with data security, and companies are on notice that they'll be held accountable for shoddy practices. We expect that any firm follow the law regardless of technology used," end quote. Don't know exactly what they're going to do about it, but they're saying, we don't agree with this. So Shannon, As somebody who follows data security issues really closely, how big is this issue? Because it's kind of new to me. I didn't realize this was something that, you know, you could bypass security by doing.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't either. Like, I must have totally missed the news when it first came out, but apparently a lot of banks have been introducing voice ID or voice authentication over phone as a way to authenticate you instead of using a password or a PIN, for example. And when I look back at this, we have not had any clear public indications that somebody has actually used this in a malicious form to hack into somebody's account and like steal their monies. So far, we haven't seen like a malicious attacker actually do this. But because of Joseph Cox and because of people like Rachel Toback, who is a professional penetration tester and social engineer, we know that this is possible because we've seen really ethical hackers already doing this to show people that it's a thing that can absolutely happen. And that's what concerns me, is even though we haven't had it maliciously happen to anybody yet, we know that it could. And given that you can also do things like you can clone a phone number and you can make it look like the person you're like for the person that you're calling, the contact, the receiver, it can look to them as if you're calling from an authenticated number. And you put that on top of voice ID matching, who's going to know any better that it's not you? And with AI and how much better it's been getting over the past 6 months, we know that people can create kind of duplicates of your voice. And given that Joseph has shown in his article here that he can easily just type something in and it will speak loud and clearly and make it sound exactly like his voice, like who's to say that this couldn't happen? So I am concerned, especially now that we're seeing so many banks doing this. And from the descriptions and FAQs that we're seeing from all these banks' different websites, it sounds like they're all using very, very similar technology because they're all describing it as, oh, this uses 100 different pinpoints to authenticate your voice, like your pitch and your dialogue. For example, the catalyst for me this week was a user told me that USAA just introduced this, and I looked it up and they do have this FAQ site that we're showing on screen right now. And it's definitely a thing. So given that they're using it as a biometric identifier, like I'm concerned. Are you concerned?
Yes, I am concerned. So concerned that I would just flat out say, if you have not already set up voice authentication for your bank, just don't. Just keep doing what you're doing. Or if they give you, another type of two-factor authentication, do that. Those are very secure. But at this point, I simply just would not do this because you just never know. These AI gets better every single day. So
yeah, it really does.
We're going to get to a point very, very quickly to where you can literally go to a website and just type and it's going to sound exactly like you. And I just, like I said, I'm just giving a public service announcement. I simply would not sign up for this if you have not already.
And I
was trying to think about, go ahead, Shannon.
I think it's important to note too, is that if your voice isn't already out there, maybe you don't have as much concern with this because people don't have access to your voice. But if you're a podcaster, if you're a YouTuber, if you're on TV doing journalism, if you're the weatherman, like there are going to be proponents of that where people have recorded your voice and they would have access to that. Even if you're
classroom. You're just a guest on a podcast once.
Oh, yeah,
It doesn't take that. It's like you don't have to have hours of of audio recordings. I was trying to think of okay, when does something like this take away the fact that voices could be AI generated for a second? When would this be something that like in a last ditch effort would be the security you need? Am I far away from home? Maybe I'm on vacation. Maybe I've lost my wallet. Maybe I'm lost. Maybe something catastrophic has happened and all I have access to is like a payphone to call my bank. Would this be some way for me to, get back some control? I guess, but how often does that happen? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's so much more likely that this is going to be abused.
Yeah. And the thing with phone calls is you do have multi-factor authentication options. You have knowledge-based identifiers that you could use. And if a bank is using multiple knowledge-based identifiers, like a password and a PIN and something that only you would know, they could even they could send you, maybe not for a payphone in your example, but they could send you a one-time code to your email or to your phone mm-hmm. that you could use instead. So there are other options. And as long as they're using multiple of those options, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to use those as opposed to just your voice.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you don't have to be public, but people are. Everybody is creating TikToks. Everybody, not everybody, many people play video games that are community-based games. Someone could get your voice off of a video game.
Yeah,
there's so many ways that you're just not thinking of that your voice could be captured. And it doesn't take a lot. You don't have to read Webster's or Merriam's dictionary to get every single word. You just need to read a bunch of them and get close enough. These systems are really, really effective at recreating what you sound like. I've played with a few of them and it's like, oh, wow, that does really sound like me. So as I said earlier, just as a public service announcement, if you have not already set this up, I would think twice about setting it up. Just do something else. Use a nice two-factor authentication with an actual authentication tool as compared to text messaging. And those are going to be good enough, in my opinion.
I'm in agreement. And luckily, the voice ID authentication for all the banks that I have looked at so far is an opt-in option. So you do not have to set this up if you don't want to.
Well, Shannon, good stuff as always. Thanks for explaining something that I think a lot of people had not heard of before, or maybe didn't realize the implications of using. So thank you once again. All right, let's check out the mailbag. Tinus, who lives in Cape Town, South Africa, wrote in because Tinus is on the ground. We've been talking about Amazon expanding into the country. Tinus says, okay, so Amazon launched to barely a whimper. To call it underwhelming is being kind. It's extremely sparse, very limited products. Most categories barely have two pages of products that are available to order, with the majority of products listed marked as unavailable. They've partnered with local couriers for delivery. They're not offering Prime, not offering cross shipment from their UK or US stores, no Kindle sales or books. Now, Amazon has shipped selected categories of products from the US and UK marketplaces for years. The delivery fee was high, though. They handled the import and duty parts of it very well, however, including billing in local currency. Kindles have been available from the international store with 5 business days deliveries since probably the time they launched it outside the US. Prime Video has operated for some time here. They're not unknown. But Tina says, Takealot is the biggest player here. And that was something that Tom was talking about as we talked about this last week. Takealot has much more molded themselves on the Amazon model. They have most things under the sun, their own fast delivery, distribution network, large third-party marketplace. Also very active in our market are the largest 3 grocery stores. Those are chains offering store delivery with online ordering. Tina says, Amazon has been recruiting aggressively locally, though, and has rented warehouse space in the 3 largest metros, Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg. So it looks like they're here for the long term, but they have a lot of work to do to be compelling. AWS, on the other hand, massive player locally and have been for a while. Tina, thanks so much for that. Yesterday on the show, we featured a mailbag from someone who is South African but now lives in Australia and said Australia was a little slow on the uptake as well. It's gotten better. So, yeah, it sounds like Amazon is wading into the South African market one step at a time. Shannon Morse, thank you so much for being with us today. What is your latest? Where can people find it?
Oh, gosh, I've been super busy over on my YouTube channel developing a bunch of videos. The most recent one was all about your questions that I was answering all about the YubiKey. Very interesting. Answering a lot of things that people may not fully understand on YubiKeys. So just trying to help out there. And they also recently introduced some new keys. So I feel like it's pretty relevant given that they have new ones coming out right now.
Well, we're so glad to have you on the show, and we'll be talking about more stuff in GDI. Speaking of GDI, if you're a patron, do stick around for our extended show, Good Day Internet. We're going to talk a little bit more about that new Disney Plus, Hulu, and Max content bundle. What might it cost, and would you pay for it?
You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back tomorrow with a RSA security conference wrap-up, and David Spark is our guest.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.